Walter Majors. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Board, and also for the record, the Alaska Mental Health Board is composed of 13 members, seven of which are mental health consumers, either primary consumers or family members of primary consumers. And we are very strongly in support of HB 162, and this is a very important bill for mental health consumers throughout the state. As was mentioned earlier, this bill is critical and really at the center of the effort to downsize API, which is currently a 79-bed facility, to a 54-bed facility. And this can only be done by transferring some of the functions that are now being provided at API into the community. And one of the most important of those are acute care hospitalization services that now can be provided within community hospitals that are being provided in API. And it's important to recognize this also as a form of privatization, you know, which is this legislature has expressed very, very strong support for. And this will be achieved through the legislation. I also like to point out a couple things. One is that there will be a primary focus, not exclusive focus, but primary focus on the implementation of these services in the Anchorage area, Anchorage Bowl area, and I want to explain why that's the case. Currently, there are no inpatient psychiatric services of this nature to serve involuntary patients, people that meet that criteria in the Anchorage area, and that Anchorage right now in API, 85% of those admissions are from the Anchorage Bowl area. So there's a very strong need to provide this service within the Anchorage area. But the services will also extend to other parts of the state, including Fairbanks, Juneau, some of the more rural areas, and will help to expand evaluation and treatment services for people who meet civil commitment criteria. As has been noted, there are, you know, some significant problems with the current law and its lack of clarity or perceived lack of clarity on eligibility for the current program, as well as clarity on the payment practices. And for this system to work on a statewide basis, that needs to be very crystal clear, and I think you'll hear about that from the Hospital Association. They need to know under what circumstances they can bill for a service and that they can receive payment for that service, and it can't be just a real blurry situation. It needs to be very clear for them so that they can plan whether they can, in fact, you know, build the capacity to be able to respond to this issue and to provide this service on an ongoing basis. So it's very critical. And also one particular issue that I just want to go on record that our board is very, very much in support of is this issue around voluntary status. Right now, the statute clearly encourages people to convert from involuntary to voluntary status, and it just does not make sense to our board that you can say to a patient, somebody, okay, we want you to convert over to voluntary status, but in the process of doing that, you lose the possibility that the state will reimburse for the service. It just does not make sense to us, and so we are 100% supportive of this service being available to both people who are involuntarily committed and those who come voluntarily but meet those same criteria, which is danger to self or others and or gravely disabled besides just being mentally ill. The other thing that I'd like to stress, which I think is very important and I think gets to the point of a lot of the discussion today, is just the partnership that has gone into the construction of this bill. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but over the last two or three weeks, there's probably been six or seven meetings, you know, that have taken place between the representatives of the department, the Mental Health Board, the Mental Health Trust Authority, the Hospital Association, consumers, advocates, the disability law, and we have worked very, very, very hard to bring about consensus on the draft amendment that you have before you right now. And, you know, a lot of issues were just discussed in the last few minutes, which could be further tweaking and further improvements on this law. But I guess I would emphasize that this can go on indefinitely, you know. And at some point, we need to make an assessment collectively. Is this something that's going to be better for mental health consumers in the state? And I really believe the answer to that is yes. And would really strongly encourage you to move the bill forward in its present form, because I do believe it makes a significant improvement. It may not be perfect, but it makes significant improvements in the system, and it is an appropriate compromise. In terms of why the bill is important to consumers, it allows services to be, you know, given to consumers and provided to consumers closer to home and closer to their natural support systems, instead of by default necessarily receiving those services at API. It would allow them to receive these services more readily in community hospitals throughout the state, including rural areas, and it'll allow them to receive services in more normative settings, such as community hospitals and less restrictive environments. And this is very important, and it does set up more predictability in terms of when those services will be paid for. This bill is also cost-effective. As was mentioned earlier, there are leveraged resources that are being applied to this. There is no state fiscal impact initially, and the services will be provided for exclusively through federal funds. And there's also the ability in community hospitals that you don't have with API, which is the ability to bill Medicaid. So it also creates an additional revenue source that doesn't presently exist for API. So in summary, we believe that this bill is a win-win situation. We've heard essentially universal support for it. It is a form of privatization, and it's a cost-effective approach to achieving what consumers want the most, which is more emphasis on community-based services as opposed to institutional services. Thank you.
Any questions, Walter?
Hours and hours, but we'll let it go.
All right. Thank you, Janet Clark. Thank you for your patience, Janet.
It's okay.
In fact, Janet, if you wouldn't mind being patient for a minute, about 3 minutes more, I want to get Jeff Jesse, who's in Anchorage. Yeah, can you hear us, Jess? Jeff?
I can, Mr. Chairman.
And it's you wanted to testify on House Bill 162?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Dyson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Jesse. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. This is a very important bill to the trustees, as we have worked with the state and the mental health board, advocates, hospitals, to try to develop a community-based system to take the place of some of the API beds. It's become very apparent to the trust that this legislation is essential to really carry out the goals of that effort. It will bring the kind of clarity to this funding mechanism that we need in order to assure both our beneficiaries and the agencies and corporations that we're hoping will take on these responsibilities, that in fact the money will follow the client from the state hospital to the community-based designated evaluation and treatment facility. I appreciate the comments that have been made about improvements that could yet be made to this bill. In any process of trying to draw people together, I think there's probably no one that sat through these 7 or 8 meetings that doesn't have their list of things that could be done to this bill to improve it. But I think the concern of the trust, as expressed by Chairman Dyson, is that we have somewhere around 22 days left in the session, and frankly, our concern is that by adding amendments, frankly, at this point, even ones that may have a fair amount of consensus, we run the risk of having a bill that's not consistent with the bill in the Senate, and we're very concerned that that could result in the bill not passing. I know that the trustees have expressed to me their willingness to continue to look at how this bill is implemented, and as we get data and information about the impact of these areas that people have expressed concerns about, then I think we'll be in a better position to come back jointly to you and recommend any necessary changes to the legislation in the future after we've had a chance to see what the implementation is like and what can be done through regulation to address some of these issues. So we would certainly encourage you to pass the bill out of committee, and hopefully we're going to be able to get this passed this year. We are planning to begin spending several million dollars of federal funds, and part of what we've assured Senator Stevens is that we will have the infrastructure in place to implement these community services, and this bill is a very essential part of that effort. Thank you.
Representative Bryce.
Two questions. I know, Jeff, or one statement, a quick question. I know you're not suggesting that we abdicate our authority as representatives of the people to make modifications to a very important piece of legislation, Jeff, because I'm going to retain that right. regardless of what committee or what group wants to propose any amendments. That's what elected representatives are for. While I appreciate the work of whoever was involved with this, there are issues that still need to be addressed, such as one question that I do have. We're establishing a certain very modest regulatory scheme here by which hospitals can be reimbursed for services up to a point. What is the authority, trust authority doing to ensure that the cracks that are currently in place in the community-based system are being fulfilled, that House Bill 162 is not addressing? In other words, how are these, what's the authority doing to ensure that the hospitals that are currently providing designated evaluation and treatment programs aren't turning away people who are in crisis?
Through the chair, I think the number one thing that's being done to ensure that is, frankly, the passage of this legislation, or attempted passage of it, which will bring more clarity to the funding role for designated evaluation and treatment. Once you have some certainty and clarity as to how one component fits into the overall continuum of care, then you can start to integrate the other services that have to work together in tandem with that, whether, for example, in the Anchorage proposed emergency psychiatric system, a single point of entry to try to make an immediate assessment of what the most appropriate service would be to somebody or someone in a crisis, linking then not only that service, but the designated evaluation and treatment services to the other pieces of our system, whether it be crisis respite, detox services, in some cases, even correctional facilities, so that rather than a disjointed group of independently operated services that don't work together to meet the needs of individuals, that we can coordinate and integrate those services so that people get the care that they need when they need it and aren't shuffled off from one service to the other. But in order to do that, you have to have a clear picture of what the role, what the funding mechanism is of each component service. And this bill provides at this point, the best delineation of that for designated evaluation and treatment that we've been able to develop.
Jeff?
I understand your role in reviewing that and the need to present whatever amendments you feel are necessary, and we certainly wouldn't interfere with that.
Jeff? We've got 14 more minutes. And we're going to lose 4 days on this bill. And we've got two more people here that really do need to testify. Representative Bryce?
I'll pass.
All right. Hang on, Jeff. If we have more questions that are important enough to hold the bill up, we'll get back to you. Janet.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Janet Clark. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for DHSS. I've been asked to speak about the fiscal note, and I'll be very quick as well. I'll echo what both Walter Majoris and Jeff Jesse said about the planning we've done for the downsizing of API and the reconfiguration of community mental health services and how important designated evaluation and treatment is to that long-range plan. We have a five-year plan that we've developed that does basically three components. It deals with the building part of API and downsizing and providing a new facility for API. It's an old facility that we've been working for 10 years to try to solve that issue. The second component is dealing with the actual downsizing of the API hospital itself from 79 to 54 beds. We have been through a feasibility study process. We have done all of the requirements of the union contract to contract out or privatize some of these services. So we've done that part of it, and we're working on that budget as well. And then the most important part of the whole program is the community piece of that, which designated valuation is just one piece. The fiscal note that's before you shows that in fiscal year 2000 and fiscal year 2001, we've been able to secure federal funds to help us reconfigure our community mental health system. We've done that working with Senator Stevens, and on page 2 of the fiscal note, just to, that's a little more clear representation, there's a chart at the bottom of the page that takes a look at the budget for FY99, fiscal year 2000, 2001, and 2002. In the governor's budget, the funds that are outlined there are federal funds that would go toward designated evaluation and treatment to the tune of over $1 million. Those funds, federal funds, are available again in fiscal year 2001 to fully implement this reconfiguration. In fiscal year 2002, the federal funds are not available, and so thus we would be back in front of the legislature saying, now that we've been able to reconfigure the services, the legislature will need to consider that funding request at that time. I have more detail about the fiscal analysis, but I understand the time constraints, so I'll be quiet and answer questions.
Any questions?
Thank you, Janet. You were very concise and clear.
May your tribe increase.
Pat?
Mr. Chair, Pat Clasby, representing the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. We wish to work with the committee today. We definitely support the bill. We ask and recognize the sponsor for the bill, and specifically the committee substitute, which went through many, many versions before H appeared before you today. We were one of the members of the group sitting at the table for the last couple of weeks, having up to 8 meetings. There were 2 to 3 lawyers present at any one time. They ranged from very strong consumer advocacy from the Disability Law Center to the state's issues about containing the fiscal note from the Attorney General's office, and a lawyer that was brought in by the Alaska State Hospital Association trying to make sure that the facilities had their needs attended to. The committee substitute is a compromise of that group. I think we all probably would have liked to have gotten a little more in the bill, but we are very proud of the fact that we have got a bill that we can all agree on and support, and hope that the legislature moves forward. I sense that there are some questions, so I'll defer comments to ask question, answer questions specifically.
Cindy Price.
Quickly.
Yes.
For those people who come in, cop brings them into the emergency room, into one of your facilities that's a designated evaluation treatment. No way to determine whether or not they're Medicaid eligible or not. How are you going to deal with that? Will your facilities, once they release and have the total bill, you know, laid out and figured out by accounting how much is owed? I'm just not quite sure how you guys have the ability to go out and collect on somebody.
Okay, Representative Rice, through the chair, I'm not really sure what your question is about. You mentioned the police bringing someone in, I would assume under a police officer's hold, to the emergency room, or someone who is admitted to a bed in the inpatient section.
Well, I'm assuming they got to get to the inpatient bed through some process. And that process is probably going to most likely be in an emergency room.
Right, they go through the emergency room, they're in an inpatient bed, they receive evaluation and or treatment services and are released to a community provider afterwards. Your question is about determining Medicaid?
What happens when you guys determine that folks can't pay? I'm making an assumption here. You guys are going to have to eat, you know, the charity, make it a charity case and eat the cost if halfway through.
Is this answer going to affect how you vote on this? Or could you talk?
What I want is I want to hear them come out and say we would appreciate some type of hybrid, a sliding scale fee language put in so they don't have to end up eating the cost for people that turn out to be over 185% federal poverty rate, but with no money available to pay for the services they received.
You're within 7 minutes of losing 4 days. Your choice.
If she, I'm sure she can answer within 30 seconds, and I'll move in 45.
Mr. Chairman, the hospitals, of course, want to be protected financially as they get in or provide this service. We feel that this bill has come a long way to increase the kind of financial situation those hospitals were in prior to getting this bill introduced as far as getting reimbursed from the state. I think the issue that's brought up by Representative Bryce is valid. I hope that if this can be addressed perhaps in the next committee, which down the line you do have House Finance, perhaps they could look at that. We certainly would have liked a higher income limit. We were working within the constraints of the federal dollars available and were told this is what was available under the federal money.
I'll make a motion after that beautiful explanation, if you're willing.
It's my understanding that this does pay for more people than the existing practice, and the way the hospitals got to the table was as the state paid for fewer and fewer people in this care, it became an unfunded mandate, and that's why some of the hospitals were resistant.
I'm concerned about the unfunded mandate issue, too.
That's why we're trying to get it with a bright red line. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, what's the wish of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bryce.
I would move House Bill 162 with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Representative Coghlan.
Just a comment for the record. Well, we are expanding an entitlement here. And with the questions and with the expectation that federal government money's going to come, and we're obligating a future legislature. And I just want to put that on the record. And I don't object to moving it, but I might object on the floor.
Thank you. And as Janet pointed out, the first couple of years of this transition are funded with federal, and let the record reflect that whatever is ongoing is subject to appropriations by the legislature.
Understood.
And so there's no commitments beyond that. Any objections to this bill moving? All right. HB 162 is moved. And with the permission of the committee, I'd like to open the hearing on HB 16, and then we'll take it up under other bills at next meeting.
Next meeting, okay.
Any objection?
Nope.
All right, and House Hess is adjourned. Good timing, Joe.